time to hit the links with Ned Michaels and Barney Ellery. It's Global Golf Radio, presented by Franklin American Mortgage Company on 104.5 The Zone.
All right, everyone. Sure enough, it is time for Global Golf Radio, and whoever that voice is, he's right. I am Barney Ellery. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm one of the golf teachers over at the Riverside Golf Center, and thank you so much for joining us, and you're also welcome to be a part of the show. All you have to do is give us a call at 615-737-1045. And folks, we've got a packed show, because for sure we're going to look back at Bryson DeChambeau, who although is ranked 7th in the world, without question is playing like the number one golfer in the world. And despite his monumental drives, his massive drives that he's been hitting, in fact, he actually establishes a new PGA Tour distance average record. But despite that, there's two peculiar instances that happened on his way to his win. And that's why I will refer to his win as the good, the bad, and the ugly. When we look back at what happened there, also later in the show, we're going to be joined by international golf journalist Garrett Johnston. He's going to join us here shortly as well. But also, I've got some sad Ryder Cup news that's coming up because, unfortunately, the hammer came down about the Ryder Cup. We will have that and so much more to talk to you about this evening. But in the meantime, the bad news about the Ryder Cup, that is not the worst news that I've heard this week. Because the worst news that I've heard this week is that my man, Ned Michaels, my partner in crime, he has the corona. Ned, welcome in, and how are you feeling?
I'm tired, I have to tell you. I'm very fatigued. It's just what you hear about, really, unfortunately. And I think I may have told everyone, I feel like I had this way back in January and February, but of course we didn't know what it was back then. I had been tested for the antibodies, didn't have any, but as we're beginning to learn more about this thing, apparently the antibodies may only last 2 to 4 months. So perhaps I was walking around with a little bit of a false sense of security, but I still was wearing the mask, was very careful, haven't been going out, but I have had to travel quite a bit. And so I think maybe on one of the airplanes somewhere, you just, man, you never know, but, it's just bizarre. Like, you literally, Barney, can't smell anything, can't taste anything.
Wow.
You know, shaved this morning, put on my aftershave, and nothing. I mean, you know, that stuff is so strong. That's why all the ladies love it, of course. I couldn't smell it. So it's exhausting.
Ned, I'll tell you, looking back, I know how and why you got it. You got it from making fun of me last week when I kept referring it to as the COVID. And, oh, you laughed and laughed. You thought that was all so funny.
It is,
but
still
little
funny.
Did you know that somebody out there had their Ned Michaels voodoo doll, and they kind of stabbed you a little bit with the corona, and here we are.
Yes, the COVID. I have the COVID. I'm hoping to get rid of the COVID very soon because it is it's a real pain in the rump, let me tell you. And I hope it just stays that way because I know it can be extremely serious. So I'm resting, drinking a lot of fluids, and have just was talking to a doctor tonight about some new protocol treatments that I might start to take tomorrow. So hopefully that can expedite the healing process, kind of minimize some of the symptoms, and get the COVID out of my life. And let's just get it out of everybody's life. Is this 2020 right now? It can just. You know what it can do, Barney. I almost said 9 different things that are going to get us kicked off air. So I'll let you guys fill in the blank out there.
Well, so we'll save that for another time. But, Ned, if you're ready, let's turn our attention to what took place in Detroit this past weekend at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. How does that sound?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get my mind off things for a little while, and let's talk some golf.
So Bryson DeChambeau, ladies and gentlemen, what he has been doing, what he started out, his goal and mission and purpose in life and his focus and attention going all the way back to late last fall, again, evidently, this experiment is working. And it's an experiment that has failed dozens, if not potentially hundreds of others in the past. And once again, as I've said several weeks ago, Bryson DeChambeau has a way of proving me wrong again and again and again. But the reality is what he is doing is working phenomenally well. Because this past weekend, what he also did to prove me wrong again, how I so dislike his putting and his putting stroke, I don't like anything about his putting stroke. But somewhere along the way, someone must have shared that with him, and that got his focus and attention, just his determination just a little bit more. And would you believe me if I told you that not only did he lead the field in strokes gained off the tee, of course he led the field in distance, but then he also led the field in strokes gained putting. And it's my understanding that since they've been keeping strokes gained statistics, it's the first time ever that a guy has, I guess, gone on to win the tournament, all the while leading the field in strokes gained off the tee and leading the field in strokes gained putting.
The anomaly there that makes me want to say, shut your mouth, is he was negative in strokes gained approach. So he drove it the best in the field. He putted the best in the field. And everything else he did, negative versus the rest of the field. That's how good he drove it. I guess it's how well he drove it and how well he putted. Putting was phenomenal. And as you were saying that, you know, I'm going to try next week to get Matt Malloy to come in. He's with Sick Putters. I'd love for him to call in because I want to know what they are doing with that putter specifically for Bryson, because he is wielding that thing like a magic wand. And the times that you thought he was going to falter with his putter, not only didn't he excelled with it. So, if again, you can't do that every week. I wouldn't expect him to do it every week, but if he can be close to those two bookends and he can get anything that resembles a wedge game, if you can hit wedges for Bryson DeChambeau, he could be unbeatable.
Yeah,
you think irons are easy. He does not.
That's right. Irons are easy, ladies and gentlemen. But without knowing what information you've looked at, it was also revealed to me that it's possible that his strokes gained approach that you were referencing may have been skewed a little bit, because it's my understanding that ShotLink is designed that when he hits a tee shot and it lands within 30 yards of the green, or I guess it finishes in 30 yards of the green, as far as ShotLink's concerned, that's an approach shot. That's not a tee shot.
And yes, so I did read that.
I think that some of his approach shot numbers got a little, I don't know how they sorted it all out, but they got a little mixed up there here and there. But
I did read that, but I haven't seen the cleaned up numbers. So if somebody has the cleaned up numbers readily available, just hit us on Twitter. I'm at Ned Michaels. Barney is at Simplifying Golf. Yeah, I'd be very curious to know. But it's insane. It's absolutely insane what he's done to his body. But Barney, you know, one of the big differences, and we talked about this, is he hasn't really changed his golf swing. And when we saw guys, we talked about the Sutherland brothers and some other folks who had gotten big, you know, they changed their golf swing because they got so muscular, because they got tight. And Bryson has done it in a very functional way. So all he's doing is adding mass and speed without changing his golf swing. And I got to tell you, it is so entertaining to watch.
But the thing that fascinates me, Ned, among so many other things, is I've seen through the years guys that improve their conditioning, and let's say that they're going to gain 10, maybe 15, maybe 20 yards. Ned, this guy has improved his miles per hour by 15 to 20 miles per hour. He went from being what I would consider a medium-long hitter, he was plenty long enough to be competitive out there, to without a doubt and without question, the longest hitter out there. I have never seen anything like that in my life.
So the question is, do you think he's changing the game? Are we watching the game being changed right in front of our eyes?
Well, let's just say that it's been, I don't know if I'm going to call it a slow trickle, from Tiger Woods going forward, that it's been 20 years in the making, give or take. But you know good and well that the next generation's always bigger, stronger, faster, no matter what the sport is. But for a guy to catapult himself from, like I said, from being already a medium long hitter to without question the longest guy on tour. Now at this point, get ready, because if you're not eating a substantial amount of calories or consuming a substantial amount of calories, protein shakes, and who knows what else, and a whole variety of different things that evidently I'm not doing, there's no other way, because otherwise you are likely going to get steamrolled. And it's not something I want to talk about right here and now, but I'm also curious to see if the USGA is paying very close attention, and all of a sudden the hammer from that perspective is fixing to come down.
Oh, yes, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it right here and right now, because it's on my mind. I mean, listen, Kevin Kisner said it in his interview afterwards. He said, I knew there were two par fives left, and I knew I had to make an eagle because Bryson was going to be hitting wedge into both of them. So, yeah, he's changing the way that the tour players are thinking, which means he's changing the way that the tour players are going to start performing. Because if one guy does it, and you see his performance, you see how well he's playing and finished outside the top 10 since the tour came back, then other players are going to do it. And the USGA, you bet your bottom dollar they're paying attention, because of everything that's been already talked about for a number of years now, is the ball going too far? I mean, he made that golf course obsolete, Barney. Just absolutely obsolete. Now, was it still fun to watch? Yeah, I loved it. And I didn't care that he shot 20-whatever under, 22, 23, whatever it was under. And I don't really care what the winning score is to some degree. But if every week guys are hitting 360-yard drives that are 20 yards from the green, well, then it becomes too routine. And then it becomes a completely different game, and then you have to change something. So are they going to restrict the driver head again? Maybe. Is it the ball? Man, that's such a big can of worms. And then the only other thing you can do is play monster long golf courses or very tight, short, bendy, lot of dog leg kind of golf courses to bottleneck guys like Bryson in. So, yeah, I think he's changing the game. And I think the USGA and the RNA, if they're not paying attention, which they are, they better be paying attention.
So I don't want to get in this discussion too significantly and get too terribly far down this particular rabbit hole. But if they are going to modify the ball, I would love for them to do this. I would actually make an argument. And again, I say this without having any kind of ball design, engineering, capacity, aerodynamics in my background whatsoever. But I would be willing to make this little compromise. You know what? If you want to keep the ball velocity, do it. But can you somehow design that little dimple sphere to where if you mishit it a tiny little bit, a little in the heel, a little in the toe, things like that, that it spins more? If you kind of hit down on it or squeeze it a little bit more, that maybe it shoots up in the air just a little bit more, so that the guys that do hit a long way, you know what, you kind of need to be rewarded. But if you miss hit it, the dispersion is about to get a lot wider.
And yeah, so because he's hitting a lot of fairways, isn't he?
I could agree with.
He's hitting so many fairways. I mean, it's not like he's spraying it all over the joint. Yeah, he's not hitting it perfectly straight. That back nine on Sunday, he didn't hit it all that well. But he did when he needed to, and he was averaging like 8 or 9 fairways. That's plenty at that distance. And you got to know that the folks in Augusta are looking at this saying, wait a minute, that's going to make 11 and 15 pretty much cakewalks. Same with even
right.
Two. Number eight, no problem. So, yeah, I think he is making people change the game and change the way they're thinking about it. And you remember Jamie Skodowski, right? Wasn't that the long drive champion? Yeah, Skodowski, who actually played a couple of tour events, some Corn Ferry events as well. And he was trying to throttle everything back. He was trying to make his game more tour caliber. And I think what we're seeing now is, you know what, just let it fly. Now, maybe Bryson hits it straighter, but gosh, it was so fun to watch, I have to say.
So
whether you love him or hate him.
The history books might show that Bryson DeChambeau, that his biggest contribution to golf may wind up being bulking up. That maybe we thought that maybe it was going to be golf machine. Maybe we thought it would be single length irons. Maybe we thought it'd be that that super long putter of his. Maybe it's going to be a little bit all of it. But right here and now, boy, if you're not making plans on gaining some weight and bulking up, and you want to consider yourself a serious mini tour player, I don't know what you're doing. But folks, keep it right here. Listen to Global Golf Radio. And when we come back, we still have yet to discuss the bad and the ugly. We've talked about the good, but now we're going to talk about the bad and the ugly, about Bryson DeChambeau's win, that, and a lot more. Keep it right here. Listen to Global Golf Radio, 104.5 The Zone. All right, everyone. We marched on Global Golf Radio. I'm Barney Allen with the golf teachers over at the Riverside Golf Center. And also at the Riverside Golf Center, we're going to have junior golf clinics tomorrow at 4 at the Riverside Golf Center. If you're interested or if you got any kids that would like to be a part of it, you can give me a call at 615-594-8022. That's 615-594-8022. We've also got ladies clinics that are happening Tuesday mornings at 10. We had our first one yesterday, and then this is going to go on for the next 11 weeks. So, again, you can find me at Simplifying Golf and find out more about it, or just reach out to me, and I'll let you know more about it. But now we're going to continue to turn our attention to what happened this past weekend at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. We've got the good, the bad, and the ugly about Bryson DeChambeau. And before we turn our attention a little bit to the bad and the ugly, again, the good with my friend Ned, who unfortunately, again, is fighting the corona. But again, the good with Bryson. Ned, he's 69 under par since the comeback. Did you know that that's 20 shots better than anyone else?
I did not know that. I'm going to go on a limb and say that's good. It's really good.
Would you also believe me if I told you that as he's played in all of the four tournaments in the comeback, so he's played a combined 16 rounds, 14 of the 16 rounds are in the 60s. His two worst rounds, he had a 70 in the third round at the Charles Schwab, and then he had another 70 at the RBC Heritage in the third round there as well. Those are his two worst rounds. All 14 other rounds are in the 60s.
That's insane how well he's playing, and he's I would say he's one-dimensional, but he's not. He's, as we just said, he's putting the ball beautifully. Short game's been good enough, but we won't talk much about his wedge games. I know we don't have time, but Barney, he's going to have to get better with his wedges. If he does, he honestly could separate himself and become the number one player in the world.
Well, actually, what I saw this past weekend, now we're right back to Tiger Woods 2000, Tiger Woods 2.0, that basically if he's finding the fairway and the putts are dropping, the tournament's virtually over.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no one, I mean, even Rory's 30 behind him. It's crazy. Did you see on I think it was on the 16th hole, he's playing alongside Troy Merritt, right? And he holds 400 yards long.
Right.
And Bryson's first play, and he says, Troy, why don't you go ahead? I'm going to wait for the green to clear. If I'm Troy Merritt, I tell him I got a few choice words for him, and then I say, no, I'm going to wait. Because there's no way I'm hitting first. I mean, you make him be uncomfortable. You make him either wait, so now your group's behind because you know that's going to make Bryson a little bit uncomfortable because he's not the fastest player on tour, or you make him stand up there and hit a shot while the guys are on the green and it's in the back of his mind. Because you want him to hit a bad shot because you're trying to win the tournament. I could not believe that Troy went ahead and hit. I mean, he's just such a nice guy. And it, I guess, is theoretically the right thing to do. But no, Bryson, I'll wait. Or you hit, either one.
But my last little stat that I'm going to tell you about the good about Bryson, 57% of his drives this year, I believe, are 320 yards or more. But now, let's turn our attention to the bad, because something peculiar happened after he wins. And some of you might have seen it, some of you might not have, but after he wins, Amanda Baglionis, well, it's on her to interview the brand new champion and basically get his first comment coming off the golf course. And Ned, I've been watching golf since I've been a child. I've watched hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guys get some kind of victory speech and things of that nature. And Bryson DeChambeau all of a sudden turned into the closest thing to a NASCAR driver that I think I might have ever seen. Because for those who missed it, he all of a sudden starts thanking every single one of his sponsors, one right after another, including going into, I believe, his trainer, his agent. I'm surprised he didn't mention his second grade teacher in second grade or something. But Bryson, I couldn't believe it. Blew my mind.
Yeah, he did. I saw that. That was, I guess he was just trying to thank his team. I mean, it's a nice thing to do when you, I don't know about your agent. Nobody really cares about your agent, to be honest, but like your trainer, because that has made a massive impact on his life and his game. So, yeah, but that didn't bother me as much as the other one you're going to talk about.
So sure enough, that when he wins the thing, once the tournament's completed on Sunday, well, evidently, he wants to make sure that he lets us know about all of his sponsors and basically his brand and his branding and so forth, because guess what? He kind of made reference to it the day before, where there's a sudden incident on the seventh hole on Saturday, and basically he hits a sort of a poor bunker shot, takes a little bit of his frustration out on the bunker, and as I understand it, kind of maybe gives a little whack or two in the sand. And then all the while, of course, there's a cameraman standing there watching him. He's the number one, he's number seven player in the world, playing like number one. All eyes are on him. This is also why you train, so that you get all eyes on you and try to be number one in the world. But all of a sudden, he takes exception to the cameraman, that the cameraman is doing his job. That the cameraman, he's not necessarily looking for Bryson to do something wrong as much as he's got his eyes on Bryson to see what he's going to do and where he's going to go. And Bryson, all of a sudden, as I understood it, there was maybe like a 60-second exchange with the cameraman. And I'm under the impression he made the cameraman feel a little small, then make him feel really, really good. And then afterwards, when he's interviewed about it, makes reference to his brand and maybe not trying to make him look so bad in a vulnerable position. And also, one last thing that, if I have to hear one more time about Bryson DeChambeau and how passionate he is about golf, I'm about to lose my mind.
Well, here's the thing about the incident in the bunker, and you nailed it. Cameraman's doing his job. That's the guy. This is his job. He's in the featured group, so the cameraman's going to follow you the whole way. And Bryson didn't like the fact that he hit the sand with his club and had a few choice words, and the cameraman was right there with him all the way to the edge of the green. So I would ask, well, what if Bryson had holed it? The cameraman would have been right there all the way to the edge of the green, catching his emotions and his reactions, and Bryson wouldn't have said anything. Bryson wouldn't have said, hey, you're bothering me. You're hurting my brand. No. That's because that's good for your brand. So this is a big conversation. You know, we can have it with Garrett Johnson. He's coming up next. Because this is a theory that I've had for a long time, that players with all the mics and cameras now, they're going to be faced with a choice of that be who they are, and the public's either going to love it or hate it or accept it, or you're going to have a bunch of robots, and you're going to have exactly what happened to NASCAR, where you're going to lose personalities because everybody knows that everything they say is going to be on air. And so you're not going to have personalities. You're just going to have vanilla all the time. So I think it's a very interesting conversation.
Well, and so, folks, keep it right here on Global Golf Radio, because we have a fantastic personality who's going to join us here in the very next segment. He's Garrett Johnson. He's an international golf journalist. He joins us next. So, folks, keep it right here. You're listening to Global Golf Radio, 104.5 The Zone.
I've always wanted to...
Making the turn on Global Golf Radio. Hope everybody out there is having a good night. Big thunderstorms rolled through Nashville. Hopefully they cleaned us up a little bit, Barney. I know I need it. I need a good rinsing to get rid of the corona, as Barney says. Global Golf Radio, I'm Ned Michaels. I am in my house fighting the corona. Barney is in his house, and he's had a long day of teaching. If you want a lesson, apparently you can't get one from Barney until 1 o'clock next Monday. But that's what happens, Barney, when you are an instructor of the year in Middle Tennessee. You can find Barney, by the way, at Simplifying Golf on Twitter. 615-737-1045. That's the number. And we're going to bring in an old buddy of ours who literally won the first event that I worked on the PGA Tour for PGAtour.com. I met. He's now an international golf journalist. He has worked with the best of the best, the CBSs and Foxes and ESPNs. And he's got a new podcast out. I'm so pumped for him. Please welcome to the show, my man, Garrett Johnston. Garrett, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Ned. I'm doing pretty good. How are you and Barney, guys? How are you? How's it going?
I'm excited to talk to you. It's been a while. What have you been up to?
You know, but you mentioned the podcast. Beyond the Clubhouse has been my focus really the last week or so. And I think a lot of it focusing on... This week is a cool week, obviously, because we got PGA Tour going on, but we also have the American Century Championship. And so I thought it was a great opportunity when you launch a podcast. I have a few guests on. Kevin Streelman, as you know, has been in many Pebble Beach Pro-Ams in the past. So if there's anyone that knows celebrity players who are going to be playing this week, it's Kevin Streelman, right?
That's right.
And the whole idea of the podcast is really, it's a friendship, the lasting friendships we all make from the game of golf, right? Whether it's just telling stories at the 19th hole after our rounds, or in my case, I've been lucky over a decade of covering the game, just getting to know players and caddies. And that's what my podcast is mainly about. It's about the friendships between the likes of Joe LaCava and Tiger Woods, you know, the caddy player relationships and how that works. And now I was lucky when I talked with Joe LaCava after Tiger won the Masters last year. One of the big things he said in my interview with him was that Tiger texted him that Sunday night, and the emotion was, Joe, thanks for sticking with me. I love you like a brother. And it's that human interest side. Here's Tiger Woods, a superstar, that's really empathizing with the regular guy, which was Joe LaCava in that case, his caddy. And that's kind of what I'm getting at with this podcast. It's about the human interest. It's about the connections you make. And so... looking at the celebrity event in Tahoe this week, Streelman, as I mentioned, Kevin Streelman, my first guest this week, was great. I mean, he's played with Aaron Rodgers, and he's buddies with Larry Fitzgerald, and he plays with all these guys in Scottsdale where he lives, all the spring training players from the Chicago Cubs where he grew up watching these guys, and a lot of really fun stories about these players to get this started off with my podcast. So it's just great. It's really about the friendships and relationships you make, and that's kind of what my focus is.
It's called Beyond the Clubhouse with Garrett Johnston. And Garrett, you know, one of my favorite pieces to this day that I think has been written, and every time you're on, I'm sure I talk about it, and you're probably tired of hearing me talk about it, but the piece that you wrote on Tony Finau when he was coming out and his grandfather. And if you haven't read it, just Google Garrett Johnston, Tony Finau story. It's a wonderfully written piece, but it's a really good glimpse into who you are as a journalist, who you are as a person. And so when I'm working, when I'm broadcasting, commentating, you know, I will often reach out to you because I know that you have so many good stories on this personal level that the players and the caddies and just influencers in the game are willing to open up to you because they trust you. And that's a hard thing that only comes through earning it and earning their trust. So when you take it to the air now, you're going to tell their stories. How do you pick who's going to be on the podcast? And then how do you prepare the questions? Because there's a fine line between, hey, we're friends, we have a relationship, but I'm also now have this podcast and I need you to tell your story.
Right. Well, to your point about, you know, me reaching out to people, the people on the front lines that are, you know, part of the game, with the announcement of the Ryder Cup today, I thought it would be cool to reach out to Nikki Stricker, who is the wife of course, Captain Steve Stricker, right, of the U.S. team. And I just thought, you know, this is such a huge day for him. It's unfortunate that they postponed the Ryder Cup. And I just asked her in a text message, I said, Nikki, did your husband have any kind of emotional down from today? Was there any just a drop for him emotionally? And she said, no, we just want to have a great event with, you know, capital WITH with Wisconsin fans. And it's a good thing that we're postponing.
Right.
So it's little things like that. I'm always looking for the emotion in the story. And we turn on the weekend coverage of CBS and NBC, whoever's broadcasting that week, and we see the three-hour window, the six-hour window, PGA Tour Live. It's great to see that, but it's also fun to highlight the emotion and understand the parents or the spouses that are involved with these tour players. It goes a long way. But with the questions, yeah, I mean, with guests, it is not an exact science. You guys know, having guests on a show, a podcast, I mean, it's really up to people's schedules. But I will look at, where is Tiger playing, right? Tiger's playing Memorial next week, right? We would assume, we would hope, right?
We hope.
He's healthy. So I would want to have, you know, maybe a Paul Azinger on the Monday after to react to Tiger's reappearance on the PGA Tour, right? You know, you look at the schedule and you just figure out, okay, who would be relevant? Who's a voice that would kind of lend some credibility to the narrative of what's going on with golf? And so that's kind of how I look at it. With questions, it's so tricky. I mean, I'm going to have like a rapid fire question. What's your favorite movie? What's your favorite shows you've been watching during the break? But typically, it's going to come down to just emotions and what, you know, what the human interest side of each person. That's kind of what I get at. I don't want to get too deep. I don't want to ruffle too many feathers, but I think I want my audience to leave the interview, the 30 minutes I visited with my subject, with the player caddy, just knowing a little bit more about what makes them tick. That's the bottom line.
And so, Gary, one of the questions that I have for you is a remarkable duo that's taking place as we speak is Bryson DeChambeau and his caddy. And I've got a feeling that his caddy is not just your ordinary caddy, because I think we all know by now that Bryson is not just an ordinary player. And so tell us about that relationship.
You know, I wish I knew more about that. Honestly, I've seen his caddy Tim at many events in the past, but man, he's got the blinders on. He's got the hat, you know, covered down in his face. He is in the zone. And can you imagine? Think about who he has to work for and how much Bryson expects from himself. Think about that. And then how would that translate to the caddy? You know what I mean? Like, so I have actually not, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to talk to Tim too much over the last couple of years, just because every time I've seen him at Memorial or at a major, I guess it's been a huge event, right? It's just not been a great time to, based on reading his face, it's not been a great time to approach him. He works for a player who is just so hard on himself and really at a very high level right now. We haven't seen anything like this in a while, guys. So I wish I could shed more light. I think in the next couple of months, I'll be seeking him out a little bit more when I get out to majors.
That's right, because you do a lot of work with the Caddy Network as well. So you have terrific relationships with all those guys. And you and I often talk about it, and as do Barney and I think the caddies have some of the best stories, and they certainly tell them in the most colorful ways. They don't care about their brand. They don't care about what their sponsors are going to think. They tell the story like it really happened. So I always enjoy hearing the caddy side of it.
Right, and it's funny you say that, Ned, because so many guys are open about it. Like Ricky Elliott, you'd be shocked. Ricky Elliott, who caddies for Brooks Koepka, right? Brooks, world-class player, four majors, he's been so dominant. Ricky Elliott, you would think sometimes that maybe the attitude of Brooks in terms of the confidence would translate to Ricky. No. Ricky's just your Northern Irish, approachable as anybody in golf caddy out there, and just polar opposites in some ways, I would say. But you also make a good point about players, and are they fully maybe transparent with how they explain things versus caddies? Caddies don't have the branding, right, as much. And there's a player I talked to in the past where I said, hey, listen, your first British Open, you missed the cut. You obviously didn't play well. And they said, wait a minute, no, I did play well, actually. What? Okay, well. And that's kind of goes to my point about, like, dude, let's just have a conversation here. You missed the cut. Anyway, it's just there's so much that goes into players. And, yes, they have to almost sometimes kind of, yeah, I don't want to say trick themselves into how they have to mentally think about how they perform. But caddies let it all hang out, man. I mean, Pooch, Dustin Rose's old caddy, and now he's on Molinari's back. He is one of the best, man. I mean, he's loves his old stories from Ryder Cups. Of course, he was part of the comeback for the European side in 2012 when Rose beat Mickelson, and he has just so many great stories. And yes, the caddies do just have they're able to be more casual, and it's a different world now than it was 20, 30 years ago. From what I gather, talking to Bernhard Langer's caddy, Terry Holt, that it used to be 30 years ago. It's like, oh my gosh, you don't talk to any press. If you're a caddy, you don't talk to any media whatsoever. And it's really changed a lot, guys.
Well, we're excited that they are talking to you. And we're excited, at least I'm very excited for you, buddy, because I said to Barney before in the break, I thought, I know he's going to do a good job. And I think it's going to be really successful. So I'm pumped for you. I'm pumped for the game. And frankly, I'm looking forward to hearing all these great stories that you're going to help tell on your new podcast, Beyond the Clubhouse. Where can we find it, and what's the best way to download it?
Yeah, the best places to find it, Apple Podcasts. It's available there on Beyond the Podcast. Excuse me, Beyond the Clubhouse. And you can also find it on Spotify. It's available there as well. So that would be the best way to download it. I'm really looking forward to it. I think we're going to see a side of these caddies and these players that you don't often see when they come on my show.
Awesome. So excited for you, bud. You can find him as well on Twitter. Garrett Johnson, thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule, bud. Best of luck to you.
Thanks, guys. Good to catch up.
Talk to you soon. All right, Barney, what do you think? Go pay a few bills and come back and chat a little bit up and those kind of items?
That's right. That and a whole lot more. So, folks, keep it right here. You're listening to Global Golf Radio, 104.5 The Zone. All right, everyone, standing on AT&T here at Global Golf Radio. Again, I'm Barney Aller. I'm one of the golf instructors over at the Riverside Golf Center. I'm joined by my man, Ned Michaels, who is recovering. He's taking it easy. He is one of the statistics, sadly and unfortunately, with the corona, but I know good and well that he's in good hands. He's going to get better. And also, a special thank you, as always, to Ryan Albanese, who makes the show happen. He's the lone warrior over at the studios. Ryan, we missed you something terrible. We are very much looking forward to getting back in studio. But while Ned's got the corona, you know what? Maybe we'll just go ahead and wait just another little while longer. But folks, we're standing right here on AT&T, and now we need to turn our attention to one of the saddest things that I've heard in the last little while, that the Ryder Cup has been pushed back. It was supposed to be in September, an event that we wait every other year for, and basically it's the equivalent of Alabama and Auburn. And not only imagine that, not only they don't even play it every year, they play it every other year, and now we have to wait a whole extra year. And, Ned, I understand, but that doesn't mean that I'm happy about it.
Yeah, I think the farther we got into this, everybody began to realize, hey, we're not even in a second wave of coronavirus right now. We're still in the first wave. And for goodness sake, the EU just banned American travelers. So how are we expecting to have a Ryder Cup in 70 days? It became only could be done without fans. And even that was going to be risky given all the television outlets, radio outlets, all the personnel that need to be there. So I think they just decided, let's wait. We're going to push it back a year. Then they're going to push back the President's Cup that was supposed to be next year. They're going to push it back another year. So, yeah, it stinks for golf fans, because if they'd been able to have it, it would have been such a good piece of real estate for golf to have the Ryder Cup sandwiched in with all these majors, to have the PGA, and then the U.S. Open, which Fox is not doing anymore. Thank you very little. And then, of course, the Masters, and you're going to have the Ryder Cup right there. It is potentially detrimental for the European Tour, because as you and I have talked about, 80% of the European Tour, their revenue comes from the Ryder Cup when it's in Europe. So they have to wait another year. They operate on 4-year financial cycles. They basically lose money 3 years and make a ton of money in 1 year. And so for tax purposes, it works out better for the European Tour to do that. But if you have to wait one more year, another year of losing money, you got big problems. And so they're already having to lay off a lot of people on the European Tour. So they're closing offices in Hong Kong, shrinking their office in Dubai.
Wow.
So it's a big problem. They're going to be able to take some loans, and have to use the future money as kind of a collateral to guarantee the loan. So it's a big problem for the European Tour, not just golf fans.
Well, the other thing that I find very disappointing about them pushing back the Ryder Cup is I was so looking forward to seeing how Tommy Fleetwood's hair was going to look, because just maybe I'd love to see if Uncle Classic could maybe get my hair to look a little bit like Tommy Fleetwood.
If you haven't met Barney yet, he doesn't look like Tommy Fleetwood. He looks like Tommy Fleetwood's elbow in the hair department. Oh, Uncle Classic Barbershop. That is my barbershop. It'll obviously be a little while before I get to go back in there, but it's just good people, and they're locally owned. They're open for business. So you make your appointment online. You can do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you show up to your appointment, you wait in the car, they wave you in, you wear a mask, they wear a mask, they wear gloves. I mean, extremely hygienic. They're very, very careful with their employees and, of course, with their customers. So if you're looking for a safe environment to get your hair cut and get a terrific cut, I'm telling you, this is where I go. It's UncleClassicBarbershop.com. That is my barbershop, Barney. Not yours. Mm-mm.
And then, Ned, with that, now that you've got the COVID, I'm going to call it the COVID. Going forward, I'm calling it the COVID. Boy, it's a good thing we didn't plan our trip to Mississippi this weekend either.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm missing Mississippi. I want to get down there. Come on. When can we go down there and have some nice seafood, have some good chicken, Barney, at Sanderson Farms? And I want to be able to put my master's bed in, for goodness sake.
Yes.
I miss it. Play a little golf, too. You know, I was thinking the other day, I want to go down to Mossy Oak. Love that place.
Yes, and then Dancing Rabbit. Can't wait to go over there. Can't wait to play the Azalea course. And that and so much more things, so many other things to do in Mississippi. So, folks, if you're planning a golf getaway, or again, maybe just a little getaway. No better place than to go to Mississippi. Again, go to www.visitmississippi.org. They can take care of all of your travel plans. And so, Ned, with the few minutes that we have left, something else just to keep reminding us that 2020 is a different year. We're going to get to see back-to-back weeks at Murfield Village.
We were going to get to see them with fans, but they have elected, due to the corona outbreak, not to have fans in attendance. Smart move, because they've got to keep the guys healthy. They've got to keep the tour going. So if the good part is, if you love Murfield Village, you get 2 weeks, you get two cracks at it in a row, back to back. There are a lot of players who, it's just a hard, long golf course. And if you're not a long hitter, and you're not hitting it particularly well, this place can punish you. So some players intentionally skip this event this week, not because they don't like the event and they don't respect Jack, but because the golf course just doesn't fit their eye or fit their game. But now you have to play it. You got to play it 2 times in a row, so you better get your attitude right.
Yeah, no kidding. And so normally, again, I have every reason to believe that that's the kind of golf course that you need to be hitting the ball exceptionally well, because I also vividly remember that was one of the times when when you made reference to Rory McIlroy in the Freaky Friday, that evidently he was hitting the ball so magnificently well on a Thursday, shoots a 63, and as fast as a hiccup the next day, now all of a sudden he's spraying it just a little bit, just a little offline, just a little bit in the rough. And on the exact same piece of property, he shoots 15 strokes higher on the exact same piece of property. And so if you play well, you drive the ball well, and a lot of quality shots, you play well in that piece of property. But boy, if you hit it a little bit offline, that golf course has some teeth. But I'm looking forward to seeing who the champions are going to emerge. And wouldn't it be something if the same guy was to win back-to-back week?
It'd be cool. He could do it. He can beat that place up. Am I hearing the jingle?
Awesome. But, Ned, I think I hear the jingle. We know that that can only be one thing. So, folks, thanks for being a part of the show. And, Ned, in the meantime, again, stay safe. Keep taking care of yourself, and look forward to catching up with you next week.
All right, Barn. Thanks, bud. Everybody take care of yourselves out there.